Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to Houston, Texas. We are Breaking the Silence. And my name is Greg Williams. You're right here in my home on a Sunday night live. And it's great to have you this evening. We're going to have a great time because we have a guest that's going to come on and just tell you some things that he's passionate about. And now he's out to change the entire world with a few events that he's doing and the functionings that he's doing it with, and a new conference is getting ready to come up in the next week or two, and all kinds of wonderful things. I can just sit around and talk to our guest tonight for hours because the wisdom just pours out of him. So I'm looking forward to the next hour of time. And like we always do each week, we've always said, hey, if you will invest with us 45 minutes of Sunday night, hopefully you're going to end up, we try to keep this promise every week that you're going to learn something, be able to use something that'll draw you closer, make you better, allow you to have more tools to be able to communicate better with maybe your spouse or family, and just how to be able to deal with the different struggles and stresses and pains and hurts and just what's going on in the wild, wild, used to be the wild, wild west. Now it's the wild, wild world that we live in. Called 2024. So, and here we are just a few weeks away from another presidential election. Can't wait, huh? Oh, I can. I'm ready for it to be over with, but I got a feeling it's never going to be over from this point forward. But if you want to get involved, there's several different ways to do it. We are live on Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page. Jump on there right now. Go ahead and hit like or follow, and you can follow us right there. So each week you will be reminded, hey, it's getting ready to go live, and you can tap right into that over your cell phone, iPad, or your computer. And or you can call us at 888-627-6008. Or, I'm really silly, but here's my cell phone number, 832-396-6525. Feel free to text your comment or your question, and we'll be glad to repeat that and read it over the air after the first commercial break, the only commercial break we'll have. Or you can do it on the Facebook page or right on the BBS radio station Facebook. We are live around the world, so welcome to the program. I had a show the other day in the afternoon. The sun was setting, and it was just blowing in beautiful, bright sunlight. So I lowered the shades, and I haven't raised them back up, but I kind of like the coziness of the room with us tonight. So it's a little different. Normally I get to look out the window, but it is fall here and the sun is already down. It's dark. And here we go. I believe we fall back the first Sunday in November. So it's going to start doing that. I don't know if anybody else, but that time of the year emotionally doesn't really trigger me, but it affects me. Getting darker earlier, if it does you, I just want to let you know that that's getting ready to happen. Seasons do that. Times of the year do that. Even time changes can actually have that effect on you. And I was reading a story, if I'm lying, I'm dying. I think it was a week or two ago. And it said that I believe the statistic was 41% of Americans today are more stressed than they ever have been in their entire life at this point of the year 2024. 41% are more stressed out at this moment than they've ever been. And a majority of them think that it's probably going to get worse by the end of the year instead of better. Are you one of those? Are you one of those that it seems like things are starting to ramp up emotionally and tension-wise and stress-wise and anxiety-wise, and everything starts coming in at you from all the different angles? I get that. The next few weeks, I'll probably have the two busiest weeks of my entire year are coming up. I believe I am in the next 14 days at 14 or 15 different places, from Michigan to California, which I'm looking forward to revisiting there, New Mexico, Georgia. I can't remember all the other places. I know I'm all around Texas, but it's going to be a busy time. So how do you deal with when there's just no rest, when your mind starts going 100 miles an hour? How do you slow it down? I may end up asking our guest tonight before he comes in, and he's listening in right now, so maybe he can give some wisdom because I need some. But I found out that every now and then I have to literally say out loud, and it's called the stop technique. And I don't know if anybody's ever used it, but you literally just declare, hey, stop. And in that saying stopping, you are alerting and informing your mind and your mental state to be interrupted, and you're commanding it's time for a pause, stop. And in that, what's going on? What's happening to me? And take a step back and try to get and gather all your thoughts, all your emotions, all the facts. And then probably the next thing to do after that stop of that declaration is, and I never was a big believer in this, but I'm becoming more and more and more as my life becomes more and more, seems like stressful. Breathing is important. Just taking those big breaths in, big breaths out, holding them in a little bit. I'm noticing I'm not able to get the breaths that I used to in my body. I don't know if it's disease. I don't know if it's age. I don't know if it's the allergy season or whatever, but I'm just noticing I can't get that full in anymore. But you need to take a deep breath and notice your breathing for a moment. Recognize it and start controlling it. And it's worth taking 3 or 4, 5 minutes just to calm everything down, just to say, okay, I'm taking a pit stop. I've been running around like an Indianapolis 500 race, and you're going lap after lap after lap after lap. I need to pull into a pit stop and refuel. And then I need to become the observer of my thoughts. I need to observe and watch and notice what's going on in my emotions, in my physical symptoms, what thoughts am I recognizing, what's happening in my body. And I'm starting to really zero into that more than what I believe I ever have before. Because with Lou Gehrig's, I'm in the constant 24/7 of feeling like every muscle in my body is being pulled away from the bones, and the pain is just excruciating everywhere. And every now and then you just need to stop and feel like, okay, where does it hurt the most? Where am I understanding that things are starting to land? And every now and then it'll just be right in the shoulders, and you'll have this after a tense day. You go, oh man, my neck is just, it seems like everything in your body has pointed straight to your neck, and it just clamps it down. And you start trying to stretch that all out and limber that up, back up. But what's going on with your emotions, your thoughts? Notice it, observe it. What's going on with your body? Recognize it, point it out, rub it down, and then proceed forward with mindfully, and I think that's an important word, consider how you would like to respond with what's going on in your life. Decide on one thing to do right now. I don't know. I'll be at work at probably 3:30 in the morning, just a few blocks away. And I'll have 20 things that I know I got to do first thing out of the chute. But there's no way that I can do 20 things at one time. So I have to basically say, okay, wait, I'm going to focus on this one thing and that's it. Nobody can really multitask like they thought they could. You really can't play a game, talk on the phone, do an email, and try to get a project done by the deadline all at one time. You may think you're qualified to do that, good enough to do that, but in all reality, you're not going to do any of them well. So you have to focus on one thing and make that one thing your attention getter. Right now, I know I have to get this done. And let's face it, the top two or three things sometimes on our list have nothing to do or no impact on what the next 5 years are going to do. It could be a silly game that you're involved with and you're waiting for the free coins to come up so you can tap that, put them in your deposit of your coin bank. And it's like, really, that's what life's all about? And we get stressed out over those little things. No, it's not. And just find that one thing that you want to check off that list. And I do create to-do list. That keeps me somewhat organized. And then also, by the end of the day, when I recognize that I've got five things out of the six things and the top five out of those six things done on my list, it's a lot better than not having a list at all. And only getting two things done. I've always told my kids, hey, shoot for an A and come in with a C. Shoot for nothing and come in with a D doesn't make much sense to me. You got to have a goal. Don't beat yourself up if you don't get to it, but observe what's going on. Then mindfully can observe how you're going to tackle that issue. And in that, take really, really, really small steps. Small steps are huge. Small steps still gets us down the road. Just sitting on our backsides, not doing a thing. Sometimes neutral, especially I believe neutral in the Christian life is going backwards. I believe you need to be in drive, but you don't have to be in race all the time as fast as you can. Just moving forward slowly can make impact. And then write down what was going on when you felt that anxiety overcome you? What are those things that triggered you? What are those things that offset you? Is it certain people in your life? Or is it your own fault because you're procrastinating so much that you just don't get around to doing anything on time and you need to change some habits? And then focus, meditate. You know, there's a scripture in the Bible that I believe is the guidebook of all of our lives. In 2 Corinthians 10:5, it says, take every thought, and you already know the next word, captive. It doesn't take just the things that are bugging you captive. It says that we should take every thought captive. So before we know if we have the thoughts captive, you need to identify the thoughts that are overwhelming you. And then to be able to take control of it, what triggered it? Because if you can figure out what triggered it, what caused it, you are way ahead of the game. But meditate on that verse, find verses. So basically, when I, you know, I probably self-damage myself more than other people damage me. I'll say I'm worthless. I have no value. But then I have to find scripture or positive thoughts to overcome that. But whoa, wait, the word tells me I am a masterpiece. I am a treasure. I am in the image of my creator. I don't know about you, but God doesn't make junk. He doesn't make trash, and all of it's beautiful in his sight. And when I do that, it allows me to get back in control. And if I depend on my emotions, lean in here a little bit. We'll huddle up a little bit. Your emotions are going to lie to you. Your emotions will lead you astray. And your emotions, 9 out of 10 times, are not based on fact. So you need to find a replacement thought to overcome what you're going through. So try that stop technique this week. I've been dealing with that the last few days. And maybe you're going to be dealing with it this coming week as we enter in. Can you believe it? Another month. Oh, no. That means we are only what? Maybe 60 days from Christmas. Time to buy Christmas presents. Oh, good night. That'll get you all excited and stressed out. Time for credit card bills to go up. Time to start trying to fight the traffic and all that. Oh man, you don't even want to talk about that. And then ladies, you got the Thanksgiving and all of that. Here comes the holidays again. What in the world happened? Just give that a shot. But don't forget that 2 Corinthians, take every thought captive. He has the power in you. You don't have the power yourself. You can take those steps and try it, but allow him to do it. Take on his yoke because his yoke is light and he will take that burden from you. And a lot of times I go, hey, Lord, can you take this from me? Sure thing, Greg. Thank you. And I lay it at his feet. And then when I say amen, I pick it right back up, put it in my bag, and carry it to the car. It's like, wait, that's not what I don't leave it there. Leave it there with him. Stop it and stop it right now and declare. Okay, anxiety, stress, let's stop and breathe. Take a break. Pit stop time. Okay, hope that works. Okay, we have one of my dear friends, Patrick Erlinson from the wonderful state of California. I've been able to be with him a few weeks ago, and I'm going to be with him in a few weeks in the future back in California. And Patrick, I just want you to come on in. He is the founder of See It, End It Film and Arts Festival. And he is the founder, the CEO, the head poobah of Father Con, also a convention that we're getting ready to conference that's getting ready to happen in a few weeks. And he has such a life story. The thing I love about Patrick, and I was just telling my bride did this today, that when you meet him and you talk to him, and we had only known each other via emails and issues like this over the Zoom, being on the same trainings or whatever together. And I'm listening to him talk and he's listening to me talk. But when you're in the room with him and you look at him in his eyes, you see authenticity, you see realness. And Patrick, you just don't see that in everybody. But one thing I want to applaud you with, you have surrounded yourself with genuine people. And that was clear. So clear the other day when I was in the room with all that awesome group of yours. Welcome to the program tonight.
Thank you for having me back.
Hey.
I'm so honored and grateful to be here. I'm sitting here frantically taking notes. I feel like I just tuned in and I was getting all kinds of, wisdom and advice from you. That was a great opening.
Well, give me your thoughts because you are a man of great wisdom. You know what causes that is because you have a gray beard and gray hair. So you are a man that automatically just seeps out of you. Great wisdom. How do you deal when things just are totally out of your control? How do you deal with that in your own life?
I have to say mine's a little bit more cerebral than all of your techniques, but I just always stop and go back to why. And so it's
Yeah.
like for me, that's it is such an important thing that I keep going back to that starting point. And whether it's in a biblical sense as well, I mean, I always go back to like, why did God even bother? Why did God go through the trouble of creating? But so in my own life, it's like, why am I doing this? Why am I a father? Why am I, now a grandfather? Woo! And why did I start FatherCon? Why is this important? But when I go back to that, then a lot of the other stuff, the swirling dust and tornadoes and things all kind of start to calm down. And so for me, that's usually what I do. I may go for a walk and just get myself centered again on, I just read recently about just the power of using your muscles and how they call it like the hope the hope chromosome or something that's released from your muscles when you use your muscles, and it reduces anxiety. And that I find that to be quite true. Like, the more that I actually go out and walk and then reflect on why, to me that's really calming. And it also stimulates more determination. Like, and so it makes me kind of want to do more instead of like hide or back away from whatever it is that's causing the problem. You kind of lean into it, and with more determination.
Do you ever ask yourself, hey, wait, I know I'm stressed out over this, and maybe it's time to forget it all and just relax, retire out? Or do you get re-energized by saying, but wait, I have a calling. I have a mission, and the mission is making a difference with all the pain and the suffering in the world. And then it kind of automatically, does it not, refuel you?
That's been my experience, is that anytime those thoughts come, just drop it. This is like way too much trouble and too much stress. And so you hear that voice, but once I go back again to the why, and you start, like, I've met so many survivors of human trafficking, and you reflect on just one of those people, and if I could do something, they would have prevented one person from being trafficked, going through all of that suffering.
If all of us had that same mind frame, we could change the world. How many churches did you actually visit this morning, Patrick?
Actually, I visited six this
Six
morning. I went
churches,
to see
and
six
you're
churches.
telling them about what?
My
Father God?
Father Con's coming up, and what I'm doing, why I'm doing it. And it was just these miraculous experiences, actually. At one point, I was on my way home, and I was going to go, okay, I'm done, I'm going home. And I saw a strip center, and I didn't even know there was a church there. It's just, I just felt this, go in there. And so I turned in, and I had to wait a while. The pastor was in the back on the phone. They finally let me come in. He came out to meet me. We started a conversation, and it turns out a woman that I know whose daughter is being trafficked is a member of that church. And I've known her for probably 10 years. And it was just this, you just feel like this, there's something heavenly moving you around, like opening doors. I think the thing that I worry about, is if God has prepared something, I don't want to miss it. If someone is there for me to meet, and I decide that I'm thirsty and I'm going to go get something to drink, and I miss it, those are the kind of things that make me a little bit worried. I don't want to miss something that God has prepared.
In my every morning prayer, I always have the line, and I've said this more than once, so I apologize for repeating it. Lord, don't let me mess this up. Just don't let me mess up what you already have divinely laid out for me today.
Because I'm more
And
than capable of messing it up.
yeah, because we'll do that. We'll overcome a thought of, well, I'll go see them tomorrow. And then today was their last day on the earth. And when those things hit into your mind, we need to really act on that, right?
I had an interesting experience yesterday. I was at the former Boy Scouts, now the Scouts of America, but they had this huge gathering up near the mountains in San Bernardino. And so they had contacted me and said, well, we like what you're doing, so can you come and have a table there, talk to people? So I did, and it was like 90 degrees, you're outside all day. And I was, and it wasn't that busy, I met a few people that were really interesting. But right at the end, I realized that the table behind me was one of the women. She had a ministry working with human trafficking back in 2014. And I haven't seen her since probably 2015. And yet she opened a number of doors for me, contacts. I went to Cambodia because of some of the contacts that I made with her. And all of a sudden, here we were, out of these, like, there were 2,000 people, and probably 200, 250 tables, and ours just happened to be back to back. And reconnecting to her was just so wonderful. Like, we were jo both just kind of blown away by how that had happened, And then another woman came up, and we had this great conversation. But then she said, "Do you have any Bible verse?" She noticed that I had a Bible verse on the table, to pray for fathers. And she said, "Do you have a Bible verse you've been thinking of lately?" And I told her, "Yeah, Matthew 15:13, which is any plant that my heavenly Father hasn't planted is going to be pulled up by the roots. And there's just something about that. It's like God has designed us for a certain reality, and all of this stuff is not gonna, it's not gonna endure. So it always gives me this kind of confidence when people say, oh, we can never accomplish peace on earth, or we can never do this. And I go, I don't know, if God had it in mind that there should be peace on earth, then let's keep believing in it. Let's keep having faith in that. But it was just this wonderful having somebody ask you that question just out of the blue in the middle of a park was so pleasant.
I don't believe I can be corrected, I'm sure. I don't believe anywhere in the New Testament where Jesus was going somewhere that a miracle was performed, that Jesus had an appointment to meet with them. Every miracle that I believe that Jesus did was an interruption to what we would think was on his real agenda. He was always heading to somebody else's place, some other city, and it was an interruption that somebody would come in and say, "Hey, Jesus, can you?" Or somebody reach and grab his robe, or somebody call out his name, or things of that order. And we think interruptions sometimes are the worst things in our life, when interruptions sometimes can be that calling card of God leaning on the edge of his seat, going, "Okay, I'm just watching to see if you're up and at him. And now pay attention. This interruption is going to be a life changer." Miracles can happen that way.
Yeah, I think for each of us too, I feel like God, once he created, he began living for us. Like we became so important to him that he just wants the absolute best for us. And it's this love that puts you in a vulnerable place of being willing to be hurt, but you're willing to go through that because you love. And I think that's sometimes I'm just in awe. I just feel breathless and in awe of that capacity for love that someone is so willing to even suffer, but won't give up on loving and won't give up on valuing us and seeing the best in us and constantly giving us opportunities to be that best. And those interruptions are so much a part of that, just.
Yeah. Wow. Hey, well, we're going to take our first break, and then on the other side of this commercial, we're going to talk about a convention that's happening in the next couple of weeks out in California, and I want to hear all about it. We're going to let everybody know how to get involved with it, how to pray about it, how to get involved with the entire organization. Let's drill down as deep as we can into Father Khan. 888 627 6008. You can call right now with a comment or a question for Patrick and Thomas, the wonderful radio board man right there at the radio station. We'll be glad to patch you right through to us. So 888 627 6008. Don't shut us off now. We'll be right back after this short, very short commercial break. Hang with us.
HCI Publishing that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back. We're here this evening with our awesome guest, Patrick Erlandson, and he is the founder of Father Con, and that's going to be happening, I believe, October 11th and 12th in the beautiful city of, what is it, Dominguez Hills?
It's at the Cal State Dominguez Hills is the university. It's in the city of Carson,
In
which is
Carson.
one of the cities within Los Angeles.
So right outside Los Angeles, and I
Beautiful
was
stuff,
able
California.
to be there in Downey a couple of weeks ago and met with Patrick and the entire board and the people in the community. It was a great community, and some even the mayors and things like that. It was a great time. Patrick, tell me what the goal is, and I guess Father Con, a lot of people will automatically go, okay, what? Because there's a, it's right there behind you on your sign on your wall. See it, end it. Father Khan, what does Father Khan even mean? And you did the a neat presentation on that the other day for the
I'm glad
people in
you
Georgia.
asked.
What's that all about?
Yeah. We do get a lot of questions about that. And I think a lot of people assume that it's something like Comic-Con, you know. And one person even asked me, do well, if we attend, do we have to dress up like some famous father, you know. not necessary, but you can if you want, you know, Homer Simpson or something. But no, the idea was, you know, I was working on the prevention of human trafficking for 8 years and really looking into cases, you know, what was it that's causing, you know, people to become vulnerable to being exploited, both boys and girls. And like, what is it that's making people vulnerable? And, you know, I just kept running across this intersection with fathers. And if you didn't have a father, if you hadn't experienced what it's like to be loved by a father, then you're much more vulnerable to some dude telling you that he loves you and you don't have anything to compare it to. You don't have a healthy model, you know, to be able to evaluate. Is this really? I don't know. My dad's love felt really different from this, you know, kind of. But our father is the first person to really love us, and should be the first male person who loves us in a way that they're not trying to get anything from us. So anyway, the reason I called it Father Con was because I feel like so many people are being conned into believing that men are not that important. Fathers are not that essential to how children grow up. They don't have as big an impact as mothers do. And that also for a lot of men who struggle with something, whether it's drugs or pornography or, you know, whatever it is that's kind of pulling them away from being the person they really want to be, that they feel that they should be. The lie is, your kids will be better off without you. Just check out, you know, go do your thing, make yourself happy. They'll be okay because they'll be with their mom. And I think I felt that we're so easily conned, we're so easily lied to, and we buy the lie, we buy into it, and it's causing so many people to check out and leave really suffering children in the wake. I mean, there have been a few articles, I think one in Atlantic Magazine, there's been a few that have come up with this idea that, yeah, fathers aren't that important. You know, kids are great with no dad. And we now have a situation in the world today where we have teenage girls who aspire to single motherhood. I mean, how absurd is that? That you have girls that are going to, well, I'm going to get pregnant so I can have a baby, but I don't want a husband. I don't want a man around. You know, it's they we've been told since the 60s that, you know, that we need to support single mothers. We need to value single mothers. We need to support single mothers. And we do. But the devastating kind of consequence of that is that we've kind of incentivized single motherhood. And there's a lot of things that have kind of caused that to happen. Part of it was, you know, President Johnson's war on poverty, where he had people going door to door in black neighborhoods telling women, if you didn't have a husband, if you don't have a man in the house, there's all this federal funding that you can get. You can get cheaper housing. And so you had the fatherless rate of African American children go from, it was around 36, 37%, I believe, jumped up to 80% at its peak. So you start having children growing up without a father, mothers taking care of a number of things. So you have a, you know, gang membership, you have violent behavior, drug use, risky sexual behavior, dropping out of school, all of these things that are now, you know, the documented consequences of not having a father's influence and a father's guidance in the home occurring on a very massive scale. And
Now, those
so
percentages are pretty high, are they not? I'm up for independent womanhood and single mothers and supporting that and, you know, advocating all that in independence. I would never downgrade that, equal pay and all those kind of things. But doesn't the surveys and the percentages and all the test results and things that have come back show the impact of what happens to a teenager when there's not a father in the home?
It's really conclusive. A woman just recently wrote a book. I forget her name. I'm so sorry, but she wrote a book called The Two Parent Privilege, and she's an economist. So she approached it strictly from an economic standpoint. She collected all of the data and looked at single mothers, single fathers, and two parent homes, and there was just nothing close. If you have two parents, and especially the other qualifier was that the woman was educated. So that you had a woman who at least had a high school education in some college, and then you had the two parents in the home raising the children thrived. They're so much better off. They don't drop out of school. They do well across the board. And of course you can always find, I mean, statistics are statistics. They can be fudged and manipulated and seen in a lot of different ways, but it is pretty clear. I mean, there are other studies that I find really interesting. There's one that was done in Europe that showed that if you had, premarital relationships, it made it harder for you to have a lasting marriage. And that was not the result that these people who conducted the study wanted, or anticipated, but that it was very clear. So going out and having other relationships before you get married is one indicator that it's going to be harder for that marriage to survive when you finally do get married. And it makes sense. You've got other people to compare to. I mean, I love my wife, but Samantha was a much better kisser than she is. Or, you've got other people to compare to. And when things start getting a little rough or rocky, you've got all of this past experience to fall back on, telling you that there's something better. I think you add to that the fact that we're living in an age of unlimited possibility and choice. So, I mean, now we have, I believe in America, it's like 66% of all children are being born to unmarried parents. So marriage is declining. A quarter of the children are living in single parent homes, which means millions of children are growing up in single parent homes. I mean, it just, we're li now living in a time where you're always going to go, there's probably something or someone better out there. And so I can commit, but if something better comes along, I'm going to split. And we're creating a culture like that of lack of commitment and constantly looking for something better. And I think it goes back to, I think we've created a very kind of a narcissistic culture of I'm supposed to be happy all the time. And if you talk to kids today, so many of them feel like I'm supposed to be happy all the time. And if homework doesn't make me happy, well then I'm not doing it. And it's this, and parents who say, well, I just want my kids to be happy. So whatever they decide, I just want my kids to be happy. It's yeah. Anyway, there's some
So we
serious
all
problems.
get together in a few weeks on the 11th and 12th. What is the focal mission in mind of all the attendees that come into that place? What are we wanting them to leave that 2-day conference with in their mental gray matter up there?
Well, I think our goals are three. So one is to inform. So we want to take all this information. We want to take really accurate, up-to-date, significant information about fatherhood and about things that are happening to children today. So things that you need to know to do a better job as a parent. So we want there's an information component of which you will be a part of, and the workshops that we'll have all day Saturday on the 12th. So that really focuses on the information side. How do we give them something, where they know more than they came in with that can help them be a better dad or a more supportive parent? And then the second is inspiration. And then I feel a lot of fathers kind of carry the burden of fatherhood. They see it as a responsibility, but they don't see it as a source of joy. And that is felt by children. So if we can inspire men to want to be, maybe the father they didn't have or a father like the one that they did have, but really inspire them about fatherhood. Fatherhood is such an important role. I mean, what happens in our communities, in our societies, our countries, very much connects to fathers. And, it's letting things continue with this slide away from marriage, away from a two-parent home is not serving us well. The rise in suicide rates of young people, and now the rising suicide rates of young boys, 11 to 15-year-olds. It's the you look on a chart and it's just going up like this, the number of children committing suicide today. And yet they have more opportunity, more access to more of everything than they've ever had in human history. So anyway, second thing is inspiration. We really want men to come away just feeling pumped about having the opportunity to be a dad, whether you're a dad to biological children or whether you're a father figure, whether you're an uncle or you can be a mentor, but we want people to really be inspired by the heart of the father. This is something really unique to men. We have the heart of the father, and it's something that should be celebrated and really uplifted and looked at. Like, when somebody demonstrates that, we want to like hold it up and say, "Look how beautiful this is." So we give a Heart of the Father award. We have three recipients this year, so we'll be giving those. And then the third is equipping them. So we always have, 30 or 40 resource, organizations or, whatever you need. If you need help, if you need some mental health issue, support. If you need help with, what do you do about a child who's using drugs, or what do you do when you have an addiction to porn, or what, so we want people to leave with resources. Like they've connected to a way to get the help that they need that they didn't have before. So those are the three objectives that we had. Everyone should leave feeling fatherhood is really important. It's a really wonderful thing. I'm psyched about being a dad or being a father figure to someone. But then also, like, there are so many resources out there that I didn't know were available, and now I know. And so that gives me more confidence to do the job that's so important.
You mentioned something just a few seconds ago. How much impact does being addicted to porn affect what's going on in relationships today?
It's massive. I think it's one of the biggest disasters we have right now is the easy access to free porn that exists today. I mean, there was one guy who changed the whole model of pornography. He took over Pornhub. He took over a number of different, top porn sites, and then he changed the whole business concept of them. So instead of you having to get a membership and go through the risk of putting out your credit card out there to sign up for porn, now you can just access it. You click a button that says you're 18, and you have access to the hardest core porn out there. Well, maybe not the hardest, but just in extreme quantities, in the millions. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of videos that are uploaded every week, of fresh content, and it gets more and more violent. It's more humiliation based. It's racist. It's sexist. It's like all of the things that we would consider negative. It all exists in the realm of porn, and it's somehow excused, or accepted. But it devastates families. The figure I heard was 500,000 divorces a year that are directly related to porn use. From my own experience, I went back to college, what, about 8 years ago, and I took some classes. It was an interesting experience. I went back and I took like a speech class, and then every speech I gave was on human trafficking or something. But I had these friendships with some of these, college students, and it was heartbreaking. I mean, this one woman came and she told me that she and her husband started watching porn. They had two kids, but they wanted to spice up their adult life. And so they started watching porn. And then you start watching more extreme things because porn doesn't let you watch the same thing over and over. The way it works in your brain is it drives you to more and more content that's more extreme, that's more of whatever. More taboo. Taboo content is really popular. So then you're exposing yourself to stuff that's more and more extreme. And then she said, "I'm not going to do that." And then her husband left her. And so now she's got two kids and has to go back to school to be a better mom for them. But it all went back to her and her husband starting to look at porn in order to jazz up their sex life. And porn is just, it's so insidious. And part of that, What a lot of men don't realize is that the more you consume, the more you're creating neuron pathways that will drive you back to it. So the reason you have this addictive experience is because the last time you were sad, angry, lonely, afraid, any of those kind of emotions, you go and look at porn in order to distract yourself or to relieve whatever it is that you're feeling, whatever pressure, or and then you get some relief from it. Even though afterwards you may feel shame and guilt and you may really feel like a bum for what you just did, but you got relief. So the next time you feel those emotions again, your brain is going to push you back to the thing that gave you relief. And then you watch it again and you're strengthening those neuron pathways. So your brain is going to start to drive you there at the first hint of anything unpleasant in your life. And it's going to be, go look at porn, go look at porn. And it's right there on your smartphone. You can look at it anytime, anywhere. You know, so now we have people watching, you know, they're watching porn on their, you know, computers at work. So now you have to monitor work computers to make sure people are not looking at porn all day when they're supposed to be working. But it also, the other thing is that then a father kind of loses the moral authority to guide his children. He's carrying that into his parenting. And it can affect in a lot of different ways. It can affect his authority to really give advice and deal with those issues when they come up for his kids because he's struggling with it. And so then you start having this ripple effect of, you know, of harm and putting kids in harm's way. There's one thing that a lot of parents don't realize is that in some areas, the largest perpetrators of sexual violence against girls and against, you know, women would be our boys between 11 and 15. And the only reason is because they're acting out what they see in porn. And they don't have any guidance. They don't have anyone who's directing them and showing that this is not acceptable behavior. I mean, after all, this is made by the adult world. They're looking at the adult world. They're learning from what they see. They're imitating what they see.
Well, tell me about the keynote speaker on the evening of October 11th.
Thank you for keep bringing me back to the.
I could talk to you all night.
Dondre Whitfield is a really interesting guy. He's been acting since he was a teenager. He's been in just numerous TV shows and movies, nominated for 8 awards, I think. But he more recently he wrote a book called Male Versus Man, and this is the reason we wanted him to speak. So his idea is that being an adult male is very different from being a responsible adult man, and that we really need to look at what does that mean to be a man? What is it that we should be growing into as males? And for him, he makes this very simple declaration that as a male, you want to be served. As a man, you want to serve others. And so he kind of breaks it down to this kind of a simple phrase, but there's a lot of depth in there. And it's like when you rise to the point where I want to be a responsible person who protects, who provides for, who is there for others as they need me, and especially for children, so that should be first and foremost on your radar, that you're aware of the impact that you're going to have. I love this quote by Meg Meeker, who's a pediatrician, and she says, "Nothing that you say or do as a parent is neutral." And I think that's so important for us to realize that if you ignore your child, that's giving them a clear message, and they're going to draw the meaning to that from their immature, inexperienced, you know, brain. So they're going to assign meaning to what's just happened to them. But nothing that you say or do is neutral. It's all going to impact your child in one way or another. And the more you kind of start to consider that, and how do we? So if I realize if I just come in and start, you know, grab a beer and sit down and watch TV and tell everyone to get out of the room, that's communicating something about what I feel is really important and worthwhile, even though my son's been waiting to hug me, you know, since I walked in the door, you know, since before. You know, so once we stop and, you know, like realize, you know, my actions are going to be interpreted a certain way by this child. And do I want him to get the wrong interpretation? No. And so even though I'm tired, even though whatever, I have to consider that, you know, and then if you do make a mistake, and we all do, then you have to deal with that. But I think his book is really good, and he comes from a faith perspective. He really feels that God has called us as men to a certain role and responsibility. So his talk will be interesting. We're also having a short film that really it's based on a true story, and it's just a beautiful 10-minute film about someone stepping in and sacrificing for the sake of a child whose life could be very much derailed if he didn't do that. And I love this film just because it shows where when we sacrifice for another person, it can turn a life that could be crushed into one that's really beautiful, and where a child can become the person that they're meant to be. I could tell you 100 stories of cases like that that are just, they're so inspiring. It's just like what a human being can do for another human being is so uplifting and so inspiring. And so anyway, so Father Khan, sorry. Father Khan is just it's a great gathering of very diverse men, of faith, no faith, of all different races, of different communities, all coming together and saying fatherhood is really important. This is something we need to take seriously, and also something we need to celebrate. And I think, as times have changed, as women now are 30% of women are making more money than their husbands. You have more doctors and lawyers. More women are going to universities than men. Things are shifting and changing, and that's resulted in the UK. You have the number one cause of death of men in the UK under 40 is suicide. And then what they've said is that their lives, they feel like they have no meaning, no purpose. And to me, that's a tragedy. I mean, in a world with so much wonder and so much need for love and a person's presence, and the mutual benefit, the way that oxytocin works in the brain, where you do something kind for someone and you get this like positive feeling. But not only that, people who see you do something kind get an oxytocin hit. I mean, it's just the design of our brains is so beautiful and wonderful. And to have somebody feel like their life has no meaning is so sad. But we need to change. I think we need to start to see fatherhood as a measure of success in life, not just the job we have, not just the money we make, not any of those other measures, but to have the heart of the father. And so, and that includes not just your own biological children. If there's a kid on your block who's, having a hard time, you step in. You demonstrate the heart of a father for that kid, and you can turn his life around, as a, wherever capacity you're in, you have.
And what kind of speakers do you have on Saturday?
We have so many good speakers, and the topics, I'll just run through these very, very quickly, but we have cyber safety and current legislation, and what's happening, has happened to protect children. Your talk would be dealing with adverse childhood experiences and, how people can deal with anxiety, stress in this world, which has its share. Fentanyl, and drugs, like what children are being exposed to that parents may not know. Human trafficking, we've got incredible speakers on human trafficking. Faith and fatherhood, we have the pastor of one of Calvary Chapel. He's coming to speak on faith and fatherhood. We have three lawyers coming that deal with parental issues, things to do with, father custody rights or all kinds of things. A lot of men are struggling because they don't know where to turn. They don't know what to do when they're being kept from their children. Pornography. There's a girl who she was raised on a porn set, on a porn site, and then got trafficked. So she'll be talking a lot about the impacts of pornography from the inside. We have a really exciting talk on teen fathers, and this is in a collaboration with Homeboy Industries, which is the largest gang intervention and rehabilitation organization in the world. We have some teen fathers that are going to be there talking about like their hopes and dreams and also what they need, the kind of support that would really help them to become the fathers that they want to be. Men's mental health, what you can do about human trafficking, what you and your church can do. So we have a speaker who's really, really an authority on what churches can do. The film screening of the movie Maya. So that's going to be in Spanish and English. We have Dr. Sam Cirillo, who's a therapist. He's a Christian therapist, and he wrote an award-winning book on how pastors can better serve their congregations on these kind of topics of sexual issues, modern fatherhood, healing the generations. So when you take responsibility to change what's been generational, and future fathers, so there's just these amazing speakers and amazing topics and opportunities for people to really get excited about what a father can do. We hear so much about the deadbeat dads and the negative stuff, but man, a father can turn things in so much the right direction, and that affects a community.
Absolutely. Well, Patrick, I tell you, it's great to have you with us. That's October 11th and 12th, FatherCon in Southern California. We'd love to have you be there. If you're in the California area right now, go ahead. And the best way to register for this event, Patrick, would be through the website.
Go on the website, yeah, which is www.father, FATHER, and then hyphen or bar. God, everyone says that a little bit differently. And then concon.org, ORG. So
Father-con.org.
Yeah.
Love to have you all be there. Love to see y'all in California. I'm looking forward to being a part of it and just getting to spend some time rubbing elbows with Patrick and everybody and visiting. And they have it set up, I believe, to where you get a chance to interact with people. There's a lot of time to
Yeah.
where you're not being, okay, one right after another. It's deliberately made to where we get to interact with each other and network and visit too. But as you heard, wow, topic after topic after topic that is really, really relevant to what's going on in today's world. Thank you for being with us, Patrick. Thank you for the mission you're on and the person you are. You are a true, true champion. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you. I ever since I've met you, like even virtually, it's just been you've been an uplifting part of my life and a sustainer of my mission. You really inspire me to keep the work
Well,
I'm
it's
doing.
going to be great to be with you in a couple of weeks and appreciate you. And hopefully it's the biggest year yet for you.
That's it. That's what we're working towards.
Thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
Thanks
See
so
you in a
much.
couple of weeks. As we
Okay.
do each and every week, we always like to close the program out, just letting people know that no matter what's going on, no matter how dark it is out there, even before the time change and it gets darker earlier, but I'm talking about emotionally, for you when life starts really going down and you wonder if there's ever going to be light. I want to tell you what, I promise you, as I'm sitting right here in my home looking at you in through a computer, that the sun will come up in the morning. And I also promise you there is hope. And hang on to that hope. Look for that hope. Stop and lean into the hope. You're never hopeless, and you don't have to do this alone. If you need somebody, text me 832-396 6525. Join us right here next week for another live edition on Breaking the Silence, Sunday nights at 8 p.m. God bless. Have an awesome, awesome week. And Patrick, again, thank you for being with us this evening. Look forward to seeing you soon. Good night.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1. For the next episode of Breaking the Silence.